This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The Justice Department has cleared the way for executions of federal death row inmates to resume. AP correspondent Mike Rossia.
The Justice Department has announced the executions of federal death row inmates will resume later this year. It will be the first time federal executions have been carried out since 2003. In 2014, President Barack Obama ordered a Justice Department review of capital punishment and issues related to lethal injection drugs. The department says the Bureau of Prisons has completed the review and executions can resume. The department says five inmates will be executed starting in December. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Congressional Democrats are quickly pivoting from impeachment talk to their legislative plans over the coming weeks. AP correspondent Sagar Magani.
The House leaves town tomorrow for 5 weeks, and Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Democrats have big plans.
We will own August and make it too hot to handle for the Senate not to take up our bills.
On streamlining government and lowering health care and prescription drug prices, Pelosi did not mention Robert Mueller's testimony or impeachment as she and other Democrats gathered on the House steps to mark their 200th day in the majority.
What I can't figure out is what they're celebrating.
Top House Republican Kevin McCarthy says there's too much party infighting for Democrats to do anything.
This is not a family fight. This is a war and a feud.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said on Thursday he was willing to go to Iran for talks amid tensions between Tehran and Washington, but also called on Japan, Britain, and other nations to join a maritime force to guard oil tankers sailing through the Strait of Hormuz. Asked if he would be willing to go to Tehran, Pompeo said in an interview with Bloomberg TV, "Sure, if that's the call, I'd happily go there." This is VOA News. U.S. officials are cracking down on what appears to be a human smuggling operation allegedly involving Marines in Southern California. Officials, including those with the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, arrested 16 Marines early Thursday after they and hundreds of other Marines were called to a battalion formation at Camp Pendleton, located roughly 79 kilometers north of San Diego. According to the Marine Corps, the arrest came as a result of two earlier arrests involving an alleged human smuggling operation. Thousands of Puerto Ricans celebrated into the night after embattled Governor Ricardo Rossello announced his resignation after several days of massive street protests. Joey Cancel, a Miami resident who was originally from Puerto Rico, says people are excited that the governor has finally resigned.
It's been a little bit of uncertainty and tension, but last night at midnight, it's all about celebration. Finally, we are arriving to a place where we can start seeing the light at the end of the tunnel.
The public fury that led to the governor's resignation erupted nearly 2 weeks ago after an investigative team, journalism group, published nearly 900 pages of online group chats between Rossello and several top aides. The chats included homophobic and misogynistic comments about his political opponents and disdainful comments about victims of Hurricane Maria, which devastated the islands in 2017. North Korea fired two missiles off its east coast Thursday. The launch comes as Pyongyang complains about upcoming U.S.-South Korean military exercises. While analysts say the launch probably will not derail nuclear talks, it underscores the United States' inability to move those talks forward. VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
The missiles launched Thursday appear to be short-range, possibly similar to those North Korea launched in May. That launch didn't derail nuclear talks. And Seoul-based analyst Bong Yong-shik says the latest one probably will not either.
It is another attempt by North Korean authorities to put additional pressure on Washington prior to actual negotiations to set the agenda for working-level negotiations on denuclearization.
South Korea has said it will go ahead with planned joint military exercises with the United States, despite North Korean objections. Washington and Seoul have already scaled back those exercises. But so far, that is not good enough for North Korea. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
A series of attacks rocked Afghanistan Thursday, killing at least 58 people, including 38 members of an Afghan security force. As the chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff met with Afghan officials, three of those bombings targeted the capital, Kabul. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia marks 172 years of independence today, Friday, with the dedication of a new international airport terminal.
This is a facelift for us. Now we can say we are the oldest independent African state. Liberia, we are proud.
That's President George Weah of Liberia. Nigeria's opposition PDP reacts to U.S. visa restrictions for election-related violence. Sudanese protesters march after an attempted coup. Malawi's military blocked protesters from marching to the State House. And Zimbabwe's Anti-Corruption Commission questions the tourism minister for alleged corruption.
This is exactly what we have been looking for, especially when we consider what we resolved at the conference at the Esibodini sometime in December last year, that the government must come out very tough on corruption.
Chokoto Tamando is a former ZANU-PF senator, and Ethiopia's first female chief justice hopes to rebuild trust. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Today, Friday, is Liberia's 172nd independence anniversary. Liberians are divided over whether the government should have official celebration due to the prevailing tough economic conditions in the country. President George Weah has invited a number of African leaders for today's commemoration. Yesterday, Thursday, Mr. Weah dedicated a new state-of-the-art airport passenger terminal at the Roberts International Airport. As Moses Gaziewu reports from Monrovia, the modern terminal is the country's first improved airport facility since the United States Army built the airport during the Second World War.
The new passenger terminal is a two-level building that includes arrival and departure facilities, advanced security and immigration systems, office spaces, security screening, baggage handling and claim areas, among others. Liberian President George Weah, speaking at the dedication ceremony, expressed delight that Liberia will from now on be counted among the African countries with such improved airport facility.
This is a facelift for us. Now we can say we are the oldest independent African state. Liberia, we are proud.
President Weah was, however, quick to caution airport authorities to keep the new facility clean. He also promised a new addition in the shortest time.
Let me send a word of caution to the management that the upkeep and maintenance of these facilities are paramount. I will be watching. I will be inspecting. My government plan is to make the Rabat International Airport regain its rightful place as passenger and cargo aviation hub in West Africa by expanding the facility and capacity, including the construction of a new Terminal B.
The new airport terminal cost the Liberian government about $50 million United States dollars. Construction began during the administration of former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Speaking to the VOA, Madam Sirleaf expressed delight that her handiwork had become a reality for the benefit of Liberians.
I'm very proud that Liberia now has a modern airport. I'm glad that I worked for it. I started it. And President Weah administration finished it. I want to thank all the Liberian people, all the technicians, and the Chinese government for providing the financing and the technical support.
Meanwhile, airport authorities say there are negotiations to attract more airlines to fly to Liberia and use the new terminal. According to Bishop Allen Clay, Managing Director of the Liberia Airport Authority, the new terminal will increase the number of passengers coming to Liberia.
The terminal is expected to process a passenger projection of 350,000 to 500,000 per annum. This is a major breakaway from the past in terms of space. While we are excited about the terminal and its beauty, there have been concerns about maintenance. We will do all to keep these structures tidy after today.
The new terminal might be giving a facelift to Liberia's aviation image, but there are also challenges ahead. Bishop Clay says electricity is one key component that needs serious attention.
This is an airport, and an airport needs to be on 24/7. Right now, we live on generator. We burn 80 gallons per hour.
and we believe that that is constraining us. But the government is coming in also. They try to talk to some guys to be able to build a dam here that will give us a strong current.
The Liberia Airport Authority says it has also made improvements to other parts of the international airport, including a rehabilitated runway, a new administrative complex, and a new cargo center under construction. Moses Gazeu, VOA News, Monrovia.
A spokesperson for former Nigerian Vice President Atiku Abubakar says the former vice president feels vindicated when he said that the February 23rd presidential election was rigged. Abubakar is currently challenging the outcome of the vote in court, citing voter irregularities and rigging. Spokesperson Paul Eber says the decision of the U.S. government to impose visa restrictions on persons who try to undermine the integrity of the Nigerian poll is a strong indication that the election itself was rigged.
The reports coming out of the U.S. as it relates to a travel ban on individuals and possibly institutions that sought to undermine our democracy, which was earned at a very high price. And so it is believed that the United States has partnered in a democratic journey that serves the interests of Nigeria and our people. If these individuals who have taken actions that were inimical to our electoral process, especially as it relates to the 2019 election, you know, are not allowed to walk around having benefited from this state mandate, so to say. So it is a welcome development. They are being banned, yes.
Supporters are saying that the reaction of former Vice President Atiku Abubakar is a demonstration of unpatriotic nature because of what they said is the welcoming of the interference of the internal political dynamics in Nigeria, particularly when Atiku Abubakar is challenging the outcome of the election in court.
Nigeria does not exist in isolation. Nigeria is a member of the Committee of Nations. Nigeria is expected to subscribe to best practices, including elections that are free and fair, constitutionality, respect for due process. So what are they saying? There should be a different set of rules for Nigeria and our people. What affects Nigeria is going to have far-reaching implications for the global community. So I think those individuals that do not understand what patriotism means. Patriotism means having the best of interests for Nigeria at heart and seeking to advance things that will seek to ensure that Nigeria fulfills all of its goals within the ambit of the international arenas.
They are also saying the reaction is an indication or demonstration of cheap politics and that the former vice president just want to stay politically relevant by making statement after the reports of this visa ban on these individuals. Your take?
Are they saying that what is good for the Greek should not be good for the Gander? It's disingenuous for them, having been members of the opposition back then, having promoted the banning of some individuals, and they turn around now and do not want people who have undermined our democracy and the democratic process to suffer the consequences of their action. It shows clearly that these people that we're talking about are hypocrites. They will say one thing today and another tomorrow.
Paul Ibid is the spokesperson for former Nigerian Vice President Atiku Abubakar. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. Zimbabwe's anti-corruption commission, known as ZAC, on Thursday detained the country's tourism minister, Prisca Mafumira, for questioning about the alleged disappearance of millions of dollars at the country's pension fund while she was social welfare minister. Mafumira is the first senior government official to be held by the commission since President Emmerson Mnangagwa revamped the commission earlier this month. Chokoto Tamando, a former ZANU-PF senator, says the commission's action is in line with the party's resolve to fight corruption.
It's just a beginning of things yet to happen, especially when we look at what the president was saying sometime last week when he addressed the Women's League Assembly. He told the Women's League Assembly that ZAC now is headed by a woman, and a very strong woman indeed, who is going to deliver. This is exactly what is happening now. So we are going to experience quite a good number of such arrests, and this is going to continue. And this is exactly what we have been looking for, especially when we consider what we resolved at the conference at the Esibodini sometime in December last year, that the government must come out very tough on corruption.
How much power does this reorganized anti-corruption commission have?
The anti-corruption commission now has the power to arrest. Now it's the power to investigate and do all sorts of things and take whoever has committed a crime to court. And this is the changes that have been brought about to help the anti-corruption do its work.
You know, Ms. Mafumira, we understand once was fired during former President Robert Mugabe's administration, but was reappointed by President Emmerson Mnangagwa.
But what I can say in a nutshell is that those who are clean are going to be proven by the court. Those who are dirty are going to be proven by the court. So let's give time to ZAC to do its work. There's no one who is clean, there's no one who is dirty, but let them be proven by the court.
Seriously, maybe you can comment on this. I'm reading a lot of articles about the economic situation in Zimbabwe. Do you think the government is dealing with the situation in the right way?
The government is doing the situation the right way. What the government is doing now, fighting corruption, because we have all these problems. They emanate from the corruption that is. And exactly this is what the exact chairperson was saying, that no, let's not blame sanctions, but let's blame it all on corruption. Because the government money has been squandered and stolen, even in the private sector, and the government cannot move on with such corruption even then. So we need to fight corruption, and we need to be very serious and very hard on corruption so that we can move forward as a nation.
So you think the Anti-Corruption Commission might come after more people?
You wait and see. And this is exactly what we're going to have to witness in the short space of time. And these people mean business, really. And they are hitting the ground running. And exactly, this is exactly what we're expecting. You know, a lot that they need to do to instill confidence. And even then, and to fulfill our manifesto, even then, that we are going to come out and fight corruption. And this is exactly what the ZAC is doing. And the government, the president, has come out hammering hard on that. That's really, we need to be very serious on this matter. And this is exactly what we are doing as a government.
Chokoto Tamando is the former ZANU-PF senator. He was speaking with me from Zimbabwe's capital, Harare. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Abbott in Washington. Today is Friday, July 26. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. Supporters of Sudan's democracy movement marched on Thursday to demand experts, not political parties, make up a transitional government agreed to with the Transitional Military Council a week ago. The demonstration came as the main protest group announced a deal with rebels who had opposed a power-sharing agreement, and also, as the military said, it thwarted another coup attempt on Wednesday night. Naba Muhyiddin reports from Khartoum.
Thousands of protesters took to the streets of Khartoum Thursday, demanding the upcoming transitional government be made of experts, not political parties, and the investigation of attacks during a weeks-long sit-in. Senior member in the Sudanese Professionals Association, Muhammad Adil, says protesters want the ideals of the revolution that led to former President Omar al-Bashir's ouster to be upheld. He says that the demonstration today shows protesters have clear demands due to the Declaration of Freedom and Change Agreement. It's against any power-sharing agreement based on political loyalties and regional political interests, says Adil. The demonstrations began as Sudan's main protest group, the Forces for the Declaration of Freedom and Change, announced an agreement with rebels who had opposed power-sharing deal with the Transitional Military Council. The protest group said it had reached a deal to reconcile their differences with rebels who are part of the movement but distrust the military. The FDFC said the rebels agreed during meetings in Ethiopia that the transitional government would be responsible for achieving peace. The deal and street action came a day after the TMC, which ousted Bashir, said it thwarted another coup attempt Wednesday and arrested senior military officers close to the former president. While some splits in the democracy movement were repaired, protesters like Ala Yahya worry the military and politicians, not technocrats, will run the government. Despite the agreement with the armed forces in Addis Ababa and the announced attempt coup and arrest to gain legitimacy and win the protesters' side, he says the street will keep pushing on opposition groups until they fulfill all our demands. Sudan's military and opposition coalition last week signed a power-sharing deal on a three-year transitional government before elections. Political analyst Al-Fatih Mahmoud says both the opposition movement and the military are trying to consolidate power and gain protesters' trust. He says today's protest to pressure the democracy movement wins their arrest. The recently signed agreement with armed forces and not yet signed constitutional agreement raised doubts as every party is trying to win the next awaited constitutional agreement. Naba Muhiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
Malawi's government used troops on Thursday to block groups protesting the May 21st election results. The protesters were headed to state residences in major cities to deliver a petition demanding the resignation of the head of the Malawi Electoral Commission, Jean Ansah. They accused her of mismanaging the May polls. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Protesters wanted to deliver their petition in person to state house authorities because previous petitions delivered through city authorities never reached the president. But in a letter addressed to the organizers of the protests, Human Rights Defenders Coalition, city authorities said holding protests at the state residences violates Malawi's laws. Henderson Muhango is the vice chairperson for the HRDC in southern Malawi. He said they were blocked because they had no time to challenge decision in court.
I think it was because of the delay. We received the letter late, so we failed to challenge the decision from the council.
Muhango said they will go to court to challenge the city authorities' decision in the next protest. But in the capital, Lilongwe, the military also blocked demonstrators marching toward Kamuzu Palace, despite a court injunction allowing the protest. The protesters accused Ansah of fraud in declaring Peter Mutharika the winner of the May election with 39% of the vote. The MEC maintains the election was free and fair. Runners up Lazarus Chakwera and Saulos Chirima are challenging the election results in court, alleging ballot stuffing and the use of TPEX collection fluid to change votes. Chakwera told reporters during Thursday's protest in Blantyre that he will not relent until justice is done.
We will pursue, of course, matters that are in court, and we'll leave it to the judiciary to do that which they know to do. But right here, we are to plead in and ask him and request him and demand him that those that miscarried this past election in terms of its administration ought to step down.
Thursday's demonstrations were marred by violence. In Lilongwe, protesters who were angry after their march toward the state residences was blocked, vandalized shops and other property. In Nzuzu City, police used tear gas in an attempt to disperse protesters. The demonstrators responded by burning a police station, a ruling party's office, and other government structures. Meanwhile, merchants say violent demonstrations hit their businesses. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
As part of sweeping reforms, Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed appointed Mirza Ashanafi to be the first woman to lead the country's Supreme Court. The charismatic lawyer has built a career advocating for women. VOA Salim Salomo has this profile.
Mirza Ashanafi made a name for herself fighting for women's rights in Ethiopia. Her most famous case involved a 14-year-old girl who was kidnapped by a man trying to force her into child marriage, a traditional practice in some parts of Ethiopia. The girl shot and killed her abductor, but was cleared of charges due to Maaza's work. The incident was dramatized in an award-winning film, Difret. Maaza is now Chief Justice of Ethiopia's Supreme Court, the first woman ever appointed, and will remain focused on women's rights and economic empowerment.
For example, in Ethiopia, there is no law, independent law on violence against women. We just have few provisions in the criminal code. So going forward, I think we need to have a comprehensive law that addresses issues of violence against women alone.
Ma'aza founded the Ethiopian Women Lawyers Association to help women who've been sexually harassed or victims of intimate partner violence. She says she wants to restore the people's trust in the nation's legal system, which has been criticized for its slow response to crime. The career lawyer wants Ethiopians to see the courts are able to hold everyone to account, including those in power. Ma'aza seems to have an ally in Ethiopia's young, reform-minded Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed.
Everyone should get equal treatment in the face of the law. It should never be used as a tool for revenge. When we respect the rule of law, it should be in accordance to that.
Ma'aza hopes her understanding of Ethiopia's culture and people will be an asset in her position as she seeks solutions to seemingly intractable problems.
If under my leadership we manage to cement the independence of the judiciary in Ethiopia, this is not going to change the history of the last 40 years. This is going to change the history of the last 3,000 years of judicial administration in Ethiopia.
Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with the latest FIFA ranking, which was released on Thursday. Senegal broke into the top 20 in the latest FIFA rankings, earning themselves the position of the number one ranked team on the continent. Newly crowned African champions Algeria were the biggest movers, going up 28 places to number 40 in the world and number 4 on the continent. Nigeria, who finished third in Egypt, went up 12 places to 33 in the world and third in Africa. Also moving up 12 places was the Barea of Madagascar, who occupies the 96th position in the world and 18th on the African rankings. The Carthage Eagles of Tunisia, the other semi-finalists at the Nations Cup, were second in Africa behind Senegal, but moved down 4 places to 29th in the world. Former Liberian football chief and a current member of the executive of the Confederation of African Football, Musa Bility, has been suspended by the World Football's governing body, FIFA, after being found guilty of corruption. He has been banned from the game for 10 years by FIFA's Ethics Committee over what the football world governing body describes as dishonestly using resources and accepting undue benefits. Bility tells my colleague James Batty that the ban is an attempt by FIFA to intimidate him for questioning FIFA's desire to take over governance of football in Africa.
The truth of the matter is that I seem to have disagreed with FIFA on some very pertinent issue regarding the governance of African football. So just 24 hours after I had filed a lawsuit at the Court of Arbitration against FIFA, this is the reaction that they gave the world.
What do you disagree with FIFA on, for which you think they are retaliating against you?
The only reason FIFA is acting against me is to disqualify me from taking action to stop them from taking over African football. That is the only logical reason. And you will see it in the argument. And we'll try to rebut that argument.
When you say FIFA is trying to take over African football, how would they do that?
But you know that already. The world knows that. If you ask the Secretary General to come to CAF to be the one in charge, where have you seen that? In CONCACAF, where you are. All of the officers of CONCACAF were arrested and incarcerated. Jack Warner and all those people. Did you see FIFA take over? Why it is that when it is Africa, there are no rules that apply? And you expect me to just sit down and... No, that's not me. It is not in my character. It is not what I've always done. And this is not the first time that I've stood up to FIFA. And this is not going to be the last time.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, July 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
The economic and political turmoil in Venezuela continues, despite international efforts to support interim president Juan Guaido against strongman Nicolas Maduro.
Host Carol Castiel discusses the Venezuela turmoil with Eric Farnsworth, Vice President of the Council of the Americas and the America Society, and Mark Feierstein, former National Security Council Director of Western Hemisphere Affairs. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Encounter.
Hello, thank you for listening to Border Crossings with Larry London. This month, Border Crossings is giving away a really cool Voice of America t-shirt. If you want to win one of these awesome shirts, all you have to do is make a song request for our show. I see it, I like it, I want it, I got it, yeah. Tune into Border Crossings at 1500 Universal Time every weekday in August for your chance to win.